Okay, so just to speak briefly about a Rishon of Parshas Emor, and there is quite a lot to say, but we'll just call attention to a few points. So the parasha begins, "Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Emor al Kohanim bnei Aaron, v'amarat aleihem, v'nefesh lo yitamah ba'amav." So here we have the instruction regarding Tumas Kohanim, the idea that a Kohen is not permitted to come into contact with a mace. And in the course of teaching us this, there is another broader principle that is transmitted. So Rashi, the very first Rashi, quotes the language of the Gemara, which actually appears in different ways a number of times in Shas, in different contexts, and sometimes from different sources, but the idea of lahazir gedolim al hakatanim, that there is a double language, amor v'amarta, in order to convey that it's not only a prohibition on the adult Kohanim, but the adult Kohanim also have a prohibition that relates to the Ketanim. So if you have a young boy, the Yisr Tumas Kohanim is only relevant to the males, the whole discussion whether there is a status of Kohenis for other purposes, but as far as the Yisr of Tumas Kohanim is concerned, so it's an Yisr on males, so that applies to the adults, but also to a young boy as well. A Kohen is not allowed to come in contact with a mace, and he can't bring his young son either. And presumably, neither can anyone else. Although there is an interesting question about that, because the language of the Ramban, it sounds over here like he's saying that this Isser is specifically addressed to Kohanim, that the adult Kohen cannot bring his child to contact with a mace, but that it's not necessarily addressed towards other adults, which is hard to understand why that would be true. Reb Simcha Zussel Breit in the Sefer Sam Derech has a little bit of a discussion, recalls attention to this Ramban. It's interesting because one wouldn't get this impression from halacha in general. It doesn't sound like that from the language of the Rambam, Hilchos Avil, and Perek Gimel, Halacha Yud Beis, where it certainly sounds like it's relevant to everyone. But it's interesting just to create a connection to what we talked about last week. So we ended off last week, Rishon of Parshas Kedoshim, talking about the prohibition of Lifnei Iver L'Sitein Michshol. And there is an interesting discussion that one of the aspects of Lifnei Iver, we mentioned that there are at least three different applications, which may be all part of one larger idea, but there are three different applications of the prohibition of Lifnei Iver L'Sitein Michshol. And one of them is that you're not permitted to help somebody with an avera. You can't provide an avera for somebody who has a tendency to commit that avera. So there is a position, the Emunah Shmuel, it's quoted in the side of the page in the Shulchan Aruch, it's a sefer that's perhaps most well known for this citation, that the Emunah Shmuel was of the opinion that the prohibition of helping somebody to do an avera is only applicable to somebody who is himself subject to that avera. But if there's an avera that's only applicable to a special group of people, and you, the one assisting, is not subject to that avera, so then the Yisr Lifnei Iver doesn't apply either, which is itself a mechudishtik opinion. So how do you make sense of that? So that probably connects to a broader question about Lifnei Iver. What's the nature of the prohibition of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol? When the Torah says that you're in violation of tripping somebody with a rock, if you help them do an avera, does that mean because just like when you trip somebody with a rock, you're exploiting somebody's weakness in order to cause them harm? And so too, spiritually, that's the case also. If you help somebody with an avera, you're getting them in trouble in Shemayim, so you're tripping them up. Or is it really a whole different kind of concept, which we have to assume then is derived from the Torah Shebaal Peh, that the Pasuk is addressing something totally different, that there's an accessory principle, that if you help out with an avera, it's ki'ilu you did the avera yourself, just like if it's a bank robbery and you drive the getaway car, so it's subject to being penalized for bank robbery. Yeah, you could get arrested for robbing a bank even though you never went into the bank because you are an accessory. So maybe that's what's going on here as well. So if that's the idea, so that's what the Emunah Shmuel could be saying, that if the notion is that by helping with the Avera, you're also partaking in the Avera, so maybe it's only applicable if the Avera makes sense for you. So maybe here also, there is some idea like that, even though we find a broader application of the idea of not allowing children to, or not helping children for sure, to be participating in Avera. But maybe here there's also the notion that it's a part of the Avera that's applicable to the parents, so they can't also bring a child with either. That's the Samdarech we mentioned before. So he quotes, and it sounds like that from the Kiryas Sefer, in the end of Hilchos Machalos Asuras, quotes from Rishai Ditrani, that just like if you were to help somebody, Machalos Asuras, help a child in Machalos Asuras, it would be like you also involved in that Isser, so too, it's as if the adult is partaking in that Isser, so therefore, maybe that's the idea, if one were to say that it should only apply to adult Kohanim, bringing the child with into the source of tomb. Again, that's not the general attitude of Halacha L'maisa, but maybe that perspective is related to that idea in some sense. It could also be relevant. There is a notion, Al Piderach HaDrush, saw somewhere, I think maybe from the Bav Jerebi, maybe that's perhaps we saw it or somewhere along those lines, that the language here that Chazal have, that Rashi quotes, Lahazhir Gedolim Al Ktanim, so Lahazhir is from the language of an Azhara, of an Isser, so there's an Isser that's addressed to the adults regarding the children. But he suggested Al Piderach HaDrush, it's Miloshin Zohar, very much Al Piderach HaDrush, Vachatidus, that's Miloshin Zohar to shine, and that the idea is that the parents should shine in such a powerful way in their behavior that it overflows to the children. The children shouldn't only have parents who are pious in private, but they have ways of behaving that the children are able to see and to recognize, and therefore they're going to behave that way also because the parents behave that way. So if that's the idea, so it's a notion that we can understand is an extension of the parents' behavior and specifically relevant to that which is applicable to the parents also. Of course, overall, we have an imperative of chinuch, which is separate from this. Chinuch is generally understood to be a mitzvah de rabbanon, the way it sounds like from many gemaras, and that there is a obligation to teach the children to engage in specific mitzvos at the point where it is relevant and applicable to them. And the whole discussion in the Rishonim, if we assume that this is an obligation mid rabbanon, because children are pater from mitzvos min haTorah, so this is an obligation only on a level midrabanan, but then the question comes up, we've talked this as man a lot about the nature and the scope of Yisurim Drabanan. So if you assume that we're obligated to follow the dictates of Chazal because of the Pasuk in Parsha Shoftim of Al-Sasser, so if a child is pater from mitzvot, he's pater from that mitzvah also. So how does he have even a obligation midrabanan? So some of the Rishonim understood that there's no obligation on the child, not minatoru or midrabanan, but it's an obligation on the parents, that, or maybe specifically on the father. It's also a whole discussion that there should be instruction given to the children in how to do mitzvot. So one way or another, that's understood to be an obligation midrabanan for the most part. And remember, the Talmidim and Shalvim should appreciate that long before your time, so the Rosh Yeshiva of Shalvim was Rav Meir Schlesinger. And I remember in my time, he was the Rosh Yeshiva when I was in high school, he came to give a shiur, and he discussed an idea which, you know, he's been quoted on often, that the mitzvah of chinuch, so there's actually two levels. There's an obligation on the level min haTorah also. There's an obligation midrabanan that we talk about, that we have to train children to do specific mitzvot. And there's also an obligation, the shinantam levanecha. So that tells us that we have to try to raise children who are obligated and who are practicing mitzvot in general and who love mitzvot and who recognize that that's what they should be doing. So that's a mitzvah min haTorah, the overall obligation to raise pious and religious and observant children. That's an obligation min haTorah. And there's a specific obligation midrabanan on particular mitzvot. So he noted, and he quoted that the Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach had also approved of this formulation, that sometimes there could be a conflict between the two. That sometimes you may have a child who you're going to want him to bench, you're going to want him to daven, you're going to want him to do whatever mitzvah it's going to be, but he's at a rebellious stage, and if you're going to push hard to do this mitzvah, it's going to hurt the whole overall development of his religiosity. So it's better to focus on the mitzvah mehatorah of making sure that the long-term plan is being fulfilled, and not necessarily to focus as much in that case on the derabanan of making sure that this particular mitzvah is being fulfilled. So that's as far as the broader obligation of chinuch is concerned. And what we're seeing here is on top of that is an iser daraisa to feed an iser to a ketanim. If we're talking about machalos asuris, we've spoken about over the course of this year a number of times, and by other isurim as well. So we have this concept, and here we find it applied in the Tumas Kohanim. There is, of course, a lot to discuss on why there is a prohibition of Tumas Kohanim to begin with. You know, why is it that the Kohen is not allowed to come into contact with Tumah? So it's a big theological discussion, and it comes from many different directions. So more recently, but Mea Shiloach, Lachman is fond of quoting, that has the idea that the role of the Kohen is to daven on behalf of the Tzibur, is to represent the Tzibur spiritually as far as their aspirations, and therefore they have to be separated from limitation. And death is a limitation. Death seems like everything's over, even though we believe that there is what beyond that, but in this world, so death seems to represent absolute limitation. So therefore, the Kohen should not come into contact with that limitation. It's a very interesting idea. The Sefer Achinuch writes that really the Kohen shouldn't be allowed to be metame for anybody. And here the Pesukim tell us that there is an exception for his relatives, for his immediate family members. So the Sefer Achinuch writes that this is a concession, because really you shouldn't have to be able to go to any funerals, but it's too hard to say that immediate relatives are going to be included in that, so that's a concession. So Sarim point out it's a difficult idea, because we find that it's a fiyu, not a concession. Cohen's supposed to be metame for his relatives. That's a difficult idea a little bit to understand that phrasing. The Kutzker, Rebbe, is quoted as saying that really the idea is, kind of going in the opposite direction, that the Kohen is supposed to be there and consider himself basically close to everyone. And therefore, really, he should be at every funeral. He should be there as part of everybody's tzar. But because it's impossible for him to do that, because he's not going to be able to be at every funeral, so therefore he shouldn't go to any funerals, which is a very interesting perspective, that the Kohen essentially has to see himself as separate from his circle and more connected to the entire Kal Yisrael, so to speak, is when you talk about in priorities in Tzedaka. So when you consider the question of an individual giving Tzedaka, or you consider somebody who's a public official administering Tzedaka from a public fund, so we sometimes find opposite rules. So somebody who's giving personal Tzedaka is obligated to prioritize his relatives. That's the proper thing to do. While somebody who's administering a public fund is not allowed to prioritize his own relatives, has to act as if he's disconnected. So here is somewhat of a similar idea, even though the Kohen does go to the levayas of his immediate relatives, but as far as his otherwise social circle, apparently he's supposed to have, in this idea, more of a democratic, across-the-board kind of relationship with Klal Yisrael, and to prioritize the few funerals that he'd be able to go to. That's something that would take away from that role. And here in this tkufa, where we're forced to reorient our whole attitude towards how Klal Yisrael is participating in the funerals and in the tzaras of everyone else, and we're not able to physically go, and we have to try to show our concern in different ways, and we're recalibrating everything. This is an idea which gives us a little bit of food for thought as well. So in addition to this, just to skip around a little bit in the interest of time, so we also find that we have the prohibition of a Kohen marrying a Grusha. Now you can't marry a Zona or a Chalala or a Grusha. And the prohibition of the Gioris also is a Machlokas, whether that's a Daraisa or a Rabbanim, but in the Pasuk we say that he's not allowed to marry a Grusha. And the opening words of the Pasuk, sometimes invoked that the name Azulai, like the Chidol was named Azulai, other Gedolim had the name Azulai, that Azulai is the name of Kahuna, that's Rashi Tevos, at the beginning of this Pasuk, Isha Zona V'Chalala Lo Yikachu. Rav Shechter often points out, I don't think that's correct, but that's how it's sometimes quoted. And the idea of the prohibition of a Kohen marrying a Grusha is also something that requires some explanation. The Meshech Chachma suggests that the idea is that also a part of the role of the Kohen is to be there for people's tzaras, is to be there in order to help them with whatever's going on, and that includes marriage counseling. So if you have a couple that is fighting or is considering divorcing, so the Kohen is supposed to try to help and try to see if he can make a difference and reconcile them. So if the Kohen is thinking maybe, okay, when this couple comes, that, you know, maybe it's good if they get divorced because then maybe I can marry the wife, so that's going to undermine his efforts. So therefore, in order to save that, in order to stop that from being a possibility, so the Kohen has to understand that, sorry, he's not allowed to marry any divorced women, so he shouldn't have any conflict of interest. He shouldn't think that, okay, maybe if I don't do a good job of saving this marriage, maybe this will be available for me. So that's an interesting perspective. It's another idea. We also find that the next pasuk goes on to say, the kidashto, that one is obligated to sanctify the Kohen, so to speak, which we understand that means for us that we have to recognize the Kohen's Kedusha, that we have to act in such a way that shows that we appreciate that the Kohen represents dedication to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore we should honor him accordingly. In general, we have specific obligations of Kavod, Kavod HaTorah, and the like. So yes, we're directing them towards an individual, but it represents our attitude towards the whole concept that they symbolize. So the Kohen is somebody who represents dedication to the Ribbono Shel Olam and that kind of Kedusha, and represents this activity on behalf of the Tzibur. So we show that we also appreciate that, and we should treat him with this extra level of respect of the Kidashto. So we have this language that L'chol Dvarim Shev B'Kedusha, it's how they say for Achinuch Reis. And there's a whole discussion if it's limited to that or not. So we're saying that only in matters of Kedusha, we give him the first Aliyah, things like that, we ask him to bench, or is it in other things as well? So that was a discussion earlier Svarim, later Svarim, the Prima Gadim thought it was only true about Dvarim Shev B'Kedusha, and the Shulchan Aruch Harav, first of Avishai Rebbe, he thought it was relevant to other things also. There's an obligation to give the Kohen priority. So the Sefer B'Shvili HaParsha, of the Vorkis, he has a discussion. So let's say you're online and you have a Kohen waiting behind you online. Should you give him priority to go in front of you? So he thought it might suggest that this is totally on this question, that if it's only for Dvarim Shev B'Kedusha, so then why should I have to give him my place in line? But if it's about for all purposes, so then maybe that's a different story. Maybe then, even in the context of waiting online or something like that, we should also prioritize the Kohen. But he quotes there that he doesn't think that that's the Maskana, because he said that Rabbi Yashiv's psak was that we're not obligated in matters that are going to cost us money or time. Time is money, so we're not obligated to give up our time and our money for this. So since time is money, since waiting online is what we see in our society is essentially a monetary schus, that the priority should come to the first one who's in line, it's an interesting discussion, b'chlal, not for now, but the whole concept of how we recognize the notion of waiting in line. So therefore, one is not obligated to give up his place in line for a Kohen. So this idea also, to continue a little bit, we'll just mention very briefly a very major concept. We'll just call your attention to it, and then we'll stop. But if you go to Pasuk Yud Aleph, so the Pasuk talking about the Tumas Mace and the concept of being Metameis for some people, so the Pasuk says, V'alkol Nafshos Mace, Lo Yavo, Lo Avu, Imo, Lo Yitameh. So here, this is a reference to the Kohen Gadol now. Kohen Gadol is not allowed to be Metameh even for his relatives. So one might think, okay, so nobody in the world, a regular Kohen can't be Metameh in general, but he can be for his relatives, a Kohen Gadol, not even for his relatives. So nobody, a Kohen Gadol, can't go to any Leviath. So that's not the case. There is an exception. Chazal understand from here that a Kohen Gadol, and this also applies to a Nazir has the same rule, a Kohen and a Nazir, they are permitted and obligated to be Metameh for a situation of a Mace Mitzvah. That if you have somebody who doesn't have anyone else to take care of his Kfura, and again, this is a notion which rips at our hearts right now because the situation is leading to such a diminution in Kavod HaMeis, and people, Rachmana Litzlan, are being lost in circumstances where it's so much harder to give them even the minimal Kavod. It's really such a tragic kind of situation, and we see that the Torah took this so seriously that a Meis Mitzvah, that even a Kohen Gadol and even a Nazir should be attending to and are obligated to suspend their kedusha, so to speak, or suspend their avoidance of tumah for the purposes of a Meis Mitzvah. So this, as Reshech often points out, is really the source for the concept of Kavod HaBrios, for the idea that there is a tremendous priority that is placed on human dignity, and this is an aspect of human dignity that is represented in this case. And as he also emphasizes, that it's unfortunate that many people appreciate that there is an idea of Kavod HaMeis, and again, tragically, that's taken such a loss and taken such a diminution over these past few weeks. It's really such a painful thing to see, but we sometimes think that, okay, the concept of Kavod HaMeis is a new standard of Kavod that begins when a person dies. And when they're alive, you can treat them however you want. You can treat them horribly. You can be terrible to them. But then, as soon as they pass away, all of a sudden, Kavod HaMeis, now we have to start caring about them. And that's the joke they say about the name of this parsha, together with the last two parshias. So last week we had Achrei Mos Kedoshim, this week we have Emor. So Achrei Mos Kedoshim Emor is a sentence that however you treat people when they're alive, but Achrei Mos Kedoshim Emor. So after they die, so then you say they were holy, then you say nice things about them. So you're willing to talk terribly about them when they're alive, but after they die, we don't speak ill of the dead, and now we care. But really it's the opposite. It's that there's a halacha of Kavod HaBrios all the time, that we have to try to be respectful of human dignity always, and that's such an overwhelming obligation that even when the person is no longer alive and they don't see how they're being treated and they don't recognize that they're being disrespected, still it applies, that the halach of Kavod continues to persist when that's no longer being perceived. So it's all an extension of the idea of Kavod HaBrios. So Soloveitchik had a drasha. It was actually a tax for this. It's an interesting story that I once saw at a sefer that he got very upset that Rav Soloveitchik made this point. But the point is obviously worthy in of itself and worthy on all levels, but that Rav Soloveitchik made the point that here you have Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippurim. He says, the holiest person in Klal Yisrael on the holiest day of the year is the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippurim. And yet, even the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur would still suspend that activity, would compromise his Kedusha and be Metameh himself for the dignity of any person. You see how great the obligation of Kavod HaBrios is. You see how much we care about human dignity, because the holiest member of Klal Yisrael on the holiest day would trade that in order to take care of a basic covenant of Bria. So you saw a Sefer once where the attacks of salvation for saying this, because the whole thing is it didn't make sense, because we don't have Leviathans on Yom Kippur, we don't have Leviathans on Shabbos. How exactly does this whole scenario make sense? Which is really not focusing on the Yikar point in order to ask that kasha. It happened to be that I saw this Sefer in a shul once. I was visiting on a Shabbos, and then Sunday, I came back to yeshiva, and I opened up, just randomly, I was looking for something else, but I opened up the Sefer Shraga HaMeir, the Chuvus of Shraga Feigl Schnellberg, who was around in London, and he happened to, the page I opened up, the next thing was addressed to this topic, addressed to this Mechaber, who had questions of Soloveitchik about this point, and he said, it's still possible that maybe we're talking about he was Metame before Yom Kippur, so he's still Metame on Yom Kippur. It's not impossible to say. But of course, the main point of the drasha is not the details of the scenario, but to say that Kavod Abrios is so overwhelmingly important, it's such a focus in halacha that even an individual who has the highest status and at the moment when his highest status is most relevant, still all of that is subsumed for the covet of the individual. And presumably the idea that the whole notion, and there's a lot to say, we don't have the time, but there's a lot to say about how the halacha prioritizes covet abrios, and the Gemara at first says that this is true specifically regarding dinim derabbanan, but then what emerges is that we find it applying also to dinim deraisa in some senses, that there are many mitzvot, such as this mitzvah Manat Torah, which takes a back seat to Kavod Abrios, and one could ask why that is. And one explanation could be that the notion of Kavod to the Ribono Shel Olam, the whole idea that we respect God, is only possible if we acknowledge the Kavod of his creation, because Kavod can only come from somebody who is significant, from somebody who has dignity. If you don't have any Kavod, so then you can't give anyone else any covet. And I thought that might be what the pshat is in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, when the Mishnah says, Zehu mechubad ha-mechabed es abrios. Who is it who is worthy of covet? Somebody who is mechabed somebody else, so it sounds like it means. So it sounds like it's reciprocal. Okay, I'm mechabed you, you're mechabed me. That's how it works. But it could be in a more fundamental sense, that if I don't acknowledge your dignity, so then it doesn't matter how you're going to treat me, because I don't respect you anyway. The only way I can get covered from you is if I first acknowledge your inherent dignity. And that's, in essence, the paradox of the Baal Gaiva. The Baal Musar talk about that the Baal Gaiva, they actually live a very frustrating existence, because all they want is to get honor from other people. They don't think anybody else matters. But they have to pretend that they do think other people matter when they're getting covet from them. Otherwise, the covet is not significant. So it's really a contradiction. They're looking for honor from people who they don't think are honorable, who don't think have any covet of their own. It's only if you recognize the covet of others, so then covet is able to be meaningful to you. So this is perhaps at the core of this whole idea of Kavod Abrios. So even the most intense, unique status of Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur is still only a outgrowth of the fact that there is a basic premise of Kavod Abrios, and that's where all Kavod can grow from. And perhaps that's also the idea, we'll just say quickly, but later on in our parsha, so we read about Sfiras HaOmer, which we are just past the middle of now. So we should say a word about that, and maybe we'll have an opportunity to give a more involved shiur about it next week. But we know that at a time when we are mourning the tragedy that happened, that massive loss, and again, this has a greater resonance in our current context, but we're mourning now the loss of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, and it's always so difficult to relate to what the Gemara says in Yevamos, that they died al shul the hagu kavod zelazad, because they didn't show kavod to each other. So it's very hard to understand how that could be. Rabbi Akiva, who was famous for teaching v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, so his students, they didn't have respect for each other. How could that possibly be? So maybe as far as looking at the lovedness of Sfiras HaOmer, you may be able to say a little bit more about that next week. But the idea that we have this mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer to count every day, and if we miss one day, we're out of the game. And the notion that it's all one integrated idea that can't be missing any part. So perhaps a part of the Musar Haskil there is that we are counting to Kabbalah Satorah, and we're very excited about that. But still, every day along the way matters, that we can't skip any steps, and we can't say, okay, because we're focused on the biggest prize, the Torah being given, it doesn't matter what happens in the middle. So if you're thinking, okay, I'm running to Rabbi Akiva Shir, it's the most spiritual and intense and wonderful thing that could be, so if there's somebody in my way, I'll push him out of the way. It doesn't matter what's in between me and him, because I'm focused on the great prize. And that can't be our attitude, that even as we're looking to the Kabbalah Satorah, so we have to recognize that every step along the way matters, and every person along the way matters, and there is such a crucial priority that we put on every human life. And that's, again, something which has such greater intensity during this tkufa, as we mourn so many losses and we have no context in which to properly do it, and we're forced to intensify and to find other avenues for how we show respect to those we have lost. And also, has been emphasized by many Rabbanim recently, that even if the government makes different calculations about when they open up and when they are going to balance different priorities, so we still have to focus on the worth and the dignity of every individual and our prioritization of protecting human life, and that is going to be our greatest focus, even when the government starts to relax the rules, even when they're not necessarily making the same demands. Klal Yisrael comes from a greater sense of chumrah as far as pikuach nefesh is concerned, as far as kavod habrios is concerned, as far as the value of every individual, and that's going to continue to inform the decisions and the policies that we have to make as we continue to deal with this terrible crisis worldwide. And hopefully through that appreciation and through that recognition, again, we should be zocha to soon be redeemed from this crisis and be able to show the proper kavod in person to everyone as the halacha requires. So I wish everyone a safe and healthy and inspiring and uplifting and respectful Shabbos, and we should be able to internalize all the values of the parsha, even though we can't hear it read in shul, and we should make sure that these priorities continue to inform how we see the world and how we relate to each other.